Your national orienteering podcast. Map and compass, navigation skill, orienteering competition.
Jeg bommet noe jævlig på bossen her oppe.
Running like a motherfucker. Your national orienteering podcast.
National orienteering podcast welcomes you again to a new episode. We are now already a week into the new year, and we see that there are lots of runners and national teams on altitude camps or warm weather training. How is it with you, Ivar? Have you any such plans for this winter?
No, not really. Of course, I will go with the Swiss junior team to Slovenia, but that's much later in the winter, already not before end of March. So not really any hot winter camps planned this year. We are lucky and it's not so cold in Switzerland, so it's doable to do some trainings here also.
Slovenia, is that to get good technical trainings in quite okay weather?
Yeah, and I think a lot of teams have been, and clubs and national teams and so on, have been training in the Lipica area before. So I think that's a really interesting area to go to. It will be my first time in that part of the orienteering world, so something I look forward to. Really, the maps looks really cool, so I have high expectations for that. But that's many months down the road. There is going to be a lot of orienteering that's happening before that. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about before we reach that point.
Yeah, just one question. Why are you going there instead of doing a camp in Czech Republic where it's Jawok later this summer?
Well, I think the official reason is that the Swiss Orienteering Federation doesn't really want to have a high focus on preparing explicit for one specific junior world championship. The junior year is a time for long-term development and not maximizing the opportunities to do well at the specific Jawok.
Yeah, you look at the junior time as a learning process towards the senior age, but there is also some learning in preparing specific, but we should not take all.
Yeah, but no, but I think that's a really good, that's a really interesting point, and I think it's something that a lot of federation are thinking about, and how do we want to prepare our juniors for the long-term progress versus the specific progress. I remember when I was a junior, we did a lot of training camps. So for example, my last year as junior, there was Jawok in Poland, and we were there a lot. I think a year before Jawok, just after Uhringen, we went, I think it was 30 Norwegian juniors for 1 week in, July, August. Then in the autumn, I was there with my club for a short weekend. In February, there was this Camp Norway with a lot of juniors, maybe 40, 50 juniors in Poland. And then I went with some club mates again in May. I'd been in Poland 4 weeks before the Jawok and I was still really bad. So probably I should have focused more on the long-term development and not specific on the Jawok where I didn't perform anyway.
Yeah, but there was also some illness there, if I'm not wrong, in both you and in the Norwegian team in that week.
Yeah, but that's something that can happen. And I think we've seen in the last few years some very, very different preparations for Jawok. For example, 2 years ago when it was Jawok in Portugal, a guy like Ilian Angeli, I think he wrote on Instagram after Jawok that he had spent 40 or 50 days or something like that in Portugal preparing for Jawok. And now he's 2 years later and he's already retired. So it's not really a simple answer to what's the best for preparation for Jawok and preparations long term.
No, but as you said, it's an interesting discussion, and no, you are a part of that discussion definitely when you are national junior national team coach in Switzerland. But we can jump from that discussion to course of the year at World of O. It was announced just after we recorded last time. The winner was announced, and it was not very surprisingly winner, I think. But maybe that it was the women's course. That was first time since 2010. A women's course is explicitly chosen as a winner.
Yeah, but I think if it was the men's course that was there for the voting, I think that would have won as well. So yeah, and I think it's been similar reasons before when you had world championship courses winning this course of the year. Maybe yeah, it's been the men's course that had been nominated, but if the women's course was nominated instead, it probably would have won also. But I think it's really good that it's only one course from each competition. So it's not like the women's course and the men's course from world champs middle distance would fight against each other for the votes. But yeah.
Yeah, we should mention that it was the middle distance course from the world champs.
In Switzerland. Yeah. And I think it was a very interesting interview with the course setters. And I was sharing some of their point of views, for example, that the first part of the course, the men's course, was better. But it's always like that. The men's course, yeah, of course, it's a bit longer, so you have more room to play with. So I think it's, in many ways, it's easier to do a good course for the men's, because you have a few more controls. You have maybe a kilometer extra of running distance. So for example, for the world championship middle distance, I think that the course until this lake control was really, really good, because that terrain was insanely cool. And then the last part of the course was kind of limited by the terrain possibilities, because you had to get up to the arena. And in the women's course, the last part of the course is a bigger percentage of the whole course. So in my opinion, that's one of the reasons why I think the men's course is better than the women's course. But yeah, of course, it's a good course, even if it wasn't my favorite.
And we should mention the course setters. It was many times world champion Simone Nigli and Urs Steiner, who was also the map maker. That could be an advantage when you're a course setter in the same terrain as you have made a map.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to have the course setter all and the map maker in one person, that's a huge advantage. And I think Simone Nigli said that in the interview, how useful it was. They were walking there in the forest, looking for control points and so on, and at the same time were updating the map. So obviously that's a good combination. It's not that easy to do at all the big championship, of course, but if it's possible, where you have one super good elite runner with a lot of experience and you have an extremely good and experienced map maker, it's hard to find a better combination.
I think we should go through the top five maybe just fast. And if you have some comments on them, you can comment. As we mentioned, the middle final for women in the World Champs was winning this competition. And Japanese Orienteering Championship long distance men was number two.
I think that's the coolest map. And there were some really nice legs. The course is a good course, of course, but I think here it's the special terrain that is really making the difference and making sure it's got a lot of votes, more than that the course was exceptionally good. I think the terrain and the map looks insane. So it would be really, really cool to run this course, of course. But yeah, I think, for example, number three and number four, the Jaywalk long distance and the World Cup long distance in Czech Republic, I think both of them are better long distance courses than the Japanese championship, but the Japanese championship has a much cooler or more special map and a more special area. And that's why I think those, the Jaywalk in the World Cup lost to the Japanese Championship.
Yeah, and then you mentioned number 3 and 4, and then we can also mention that the world champs long distance number 5.
Yeah, and then, you know, four long distance races in the top 5, that's exactly how it should be in the for us old school orienteers. But yeah, I think there's been, if you're looking down the list there in the rest of the top 10, there's a lot of really, really good courses. And also further down, I think the best sprint course was only down in 13th place. I think partly because, yeah, it's always that the bigger events are making, they have some kind of bonus in these competitions because everyone or more people have seen these courses, more people have a relation to or a specific set of feelings for a course that has been run at the World Cup or the World Championship or so on. And this year, yeah, there was sprint races in the autumn, European Championship in Italy, for example. But there, the courses was maybe a little bit too simple. So I expect next year with more big events being sprint and with the Sprint World Championship, I think we will see at least one sprint course in the top 10 next year.
Just back to the World Champs, the relay courses. I was a bit disappointed, if that's allowed to say. It was courses like back to relay in the West Coast Champs in Norway, with almost just running and up and hill and not so difficult and challenging courses. What do you think about that? Would it be possible to have the relay courses also in the same area as the middle distance, or was it too long to the arena?
I think it would have been too long. So basically, if you had used the same arena and then running down, I think you would barely get around the lake before you had to turn up. So it would have been a lot of these transport orienteering that is not so tricky, and then maybe have few. 1.5 kilometer, 2 kilometer maximum with these technical parts. So, and I also think it's good that, when all the races are from the same arena, it's good that you can spread out, so it's not the same area is being used twice.
I understand. So it's always a reason why. And now it's announced why and who will get the quota and how big the quotas will be for long distance in the World Champions in 2025.
Yeah,
you can set us into that one.
Yeah, so because there's a big difference between the long distance and the middle distance at the World Championship. At the middle distance, there is a qualification race, which means that every country can come with 3 runners in each class, plus defending champions and so on. But every country has 3. But in the long distance, where you have longer starting interval, no qualification, so everyone is going straight to the final. If all the nations were to run with 3 guys or 3 girls, it would be way too big start field, way too big start depth from the first start to the last starter. So therefore, there is quotas. And it's been like this for 10 years or something like that since they stopped doing qualifications. The system is that based on previous results, you are in first division, second division, or third division. Where the countries that are in the first division, they get 3 spots, second division get 2 spots, and then the rest in the third spot gets 1 spot, sorry. And then there's this system with the relegation and promotion that is updated after every Forest Walk. This year it's been some changes on the women's side. France has been relegated from Division 1, meaning that they had 3 spots this year, but next time in Finland in 2 year in 25 they will only have 2 spots, and then Latvia went the other way, so they are going from 2 spots this time till 3 next time.
We're talking in the women's class.
Yes, in the women's class.
Yeah.
Yes, and then on the from Division 2, North America had a rough World Champs, so both USA and Canada goes from 2 spots to 1 spot next year. While Slovakia and Japan is getting promoted, so they get 2 runners next time. So that's the changes on the women's side. On the men's side, we have two nations being relegated from the first division. Both Ukraine and Estonia is dropping down from three runners to two runners. And Denmark and Latvia will take spots in Division 1, meaning that Denmark and Latvia will have three runners at the long distance in Finland. From Division 2, Slovakia and Bulgaria is going from two runners to one runner. And Canada and Belgium is going from one runner to two runners. So, yeah, some changes here.
And this will be the quotas in Finland, as we mentioned, in 2025. There we will not see Elena Ross. She retired after the medal in the knockout sprint in European champs. And she, on her blog, she posted a summary, quite nice summary of her career. Have you read that?
No, actually, I've not read it, but I've seen it. So it's on my list. On these things, I'm often, yeah, between a week and or 2 weeks behind at the World of Unio. So I'm always a bit behind there. So I have to read up when I have time next weekend.
Yeah, she will be a colleague of you in junior national team coaching, isn't she?
No, she's with the elite team. So she's the under 25 coach. So not with the juniors.
Yeah, that's true. Is she more competent? No, I'm
just... Yeah, obviously more competent.
There was at least some competent sprint racing in China also this weekend with the Park World Tour race 3 and 4, the two final races in that tour for this season. It was the famous names atop again.
Yeah, so Jannik Michels and Thomas Krivda has been dominating the races here. No surprise. On the third day, Jannik Michels got the victory. I think Thomas Krivda mispunched or forgot the control. So then Jannik Michels won ahead of Jonas Hubacek, and we got a Chinese guy on the podium. I think from the translation, it's Liu Qiuming. From the result list I've seen, it's been with the Chinese signs, so it's not really so easy for me to know who he is. But he got the third place here. But he was 1.5 minutes behind Jannik, so quite a big time difference here.
And it was the Italian Martino Palumbo who won the women's class there in race 3.
Or, you know, we think so. We haven't seen the result of this, but from the photos, it seems like she was winning ahead of Jana Petrova and Lone Brockmann. But yeah, we're not 100% sure.
There are a bit late results in the Park World Tour. But at least we know that in the short last race of this, it was a clear victory for Thomas Krivda.
Yeah, so he won with almost a minute ahead of Jannik Michels and 1:20 ahead of Jonas Hubacek. So obviously a very good race from Thomas Krivda. I think, yeah, these Park World Tour races, they don't mean anything as a race, but it's really, really good training. I've seen some maps from Øystein Kvål Østebø Strava and so on, and the areas looks really, really tricky. The courses looks good. So it's a perfect training for these guys. And yeah, even if the races itself and the result doesn't matter, to be able to do a good technical performance in a very tricky sprint course, that's going to be, yeah, that's a confidence boost for Thomas Krivda.
One quiz question here.
Who
do you think has run most Park World Tour races since the start in the mid 1990s?
I think it used to be Yuri Omelchenko, but maybe I think Wollastebø have passed him now with four races here.
Yeah, I think Wollastebø. It was a nice interview with him in the Orienteer Pod, Ralph Street, Thomas. Magnus De Wet and Tim Robertson's podcast. Øystein told that he was one race or two behind Omelchenko, but now he has passed him.
Yeah, Øystein Kvål is a legend. And yeah, it's I also was listening to that pod some days ago, and yeah, I think Øystein is 42, he's turning 43 this year or something like that, and he's still aiming for the Norwegian national team at the first World Cup round in Switzerland and in Italy. So yeah, he's been struggling with injuries in 22-23, but yeah, it will be very impressive if he comes back to the Norwegian national team at that age.
He is a legend, and there will be also new legend coming up. Big Five is a competition in South Africa. It's been held during Christmas or in the first days of this new year. And there were some Swedes and Norwegians down there who took mainly the first positions in the overall there.
Yeah, I don't know if any of these runners are combining. Yeah, they're for example first participating here in these big five races and then going up to altitude training camp, or if they're combining with that, or if they just went holiday to do some orienteering in South Africa. But yeah, on the women's class we have three Scandinavian runners in front. Fanny Sundblad from Eksjö was winning. The Swedish girl was winning the overall on the women's side quite clearly. Sigrid Gran Schmidt was number two. She's from the Norwegian national team for juniors, running for Halden. Daughter of the former German star Frauke Schmidt, isn't that correct?
Yes, Frauke. She had a medal in the World Champs in Scotland in 1999. And then it was short distance, not the middle distance.
Yeah, and her daughter was also good in the short distance. So she won the last race where the winning time was about 20 minutes. So yeah, she's learning from the mother. And then the third girl on the podium was Gabriela Bergander, also a Swedish girl from Eksjö. But yeah, the gaps in the overall was quite big, and Fanny Sundblad won very clear. But not as clear as in the men's class, where Axel Granqvist, he won all the four first races. And then he didn't start the last one, but that was enough to score 4,000 out of 4,000 possible points. In second place, we have Joseph Barrett, American runner, I think. He was winning the last day when Axel Granqvist was not there. And then Martin Järf from IK Hakkarspojkarna was number three, another Swedish guy there.
Granqvist, he is a contender for the Swedish World Champs team. I think maybe he has ambitions on going there.
Yeah, but it's not going to be easy. He's a good sprinter, but there is a lot of strong sprinters on the Swedish men's side. So, but it's definitely a guy to watch out for when we come to the World Cup, hopefully, and also for the Swedish selection for World Champs.
If there is no new silly season, we can discuss if this episode's guest will be in the World Champs team for Norway. We have talked to Pia Jungvik, and should we listen to her first and then discuss?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, then we have Pia Jungvik. Listen out there. Our orienteering podcast has reached down actually to Australia to talk with Pia Jungvik. Hello, Pia. How are you now down in Australia?
Hello. I'm doing fine. It's nice to be in the warm weather instead of being in the cold weather and snowy conditions in Norway right now.
Yeah, you have been in Australia for a couple of weeks and celebrated Christmas there. Maybe not everyone knows why. You can just tell a bit about your grandparents in Australia.
Yes, so I'm here visiting family. My mom is Australian, so it's been a while since I've been here and visiting my grandparents, so it was about time that I took the trip here and to see them.
Yeah, and when you are such an ambitious athlete, you don't go on a trip without training clothes, I assume. So how has it been down there training?
Well, first of all, it's been very nice to get some some sun and warm weather, but it's been a bit of a challenge as well because it's too hot almost, and can't really go skiing here, so it's been some alternative training indoor, and I've had to go inside to do some running on the treadmill and stuff, but it's been good.
How has your training been going? You're telling you're doing alternative training now. Is that just to be on the safe side, or do you have any injuries or
something? No, it's mostly been running, but it's nice to be on the safe side and to get a bit more training volume on the alternative training.
Yeah, about more training volume. Going into the senior class, how do you look at that, and what are the things you do different compared to being a junior runner?
I wouldn't say that I do. So I've been, I've not been doing anything different really, but just trying to keep up the improvement and try to take steps all the time. With trying to increase the volume and getting some good quality training.
Did you change anything when you moved from Oslo to Uppsala a couple of years ago? Was that also a change in training, maybe?
Yeah, that was probably the most, when I did the most changes of my training. So I went from doing a lot of skiing and a lot of skiing back home. And then when I moved, I had to use other alternative training methods and increased my running quite much. But it's been good. It's been good, and I'm continuing with the running a lot, and it's been working for me. So
And have you also been more on training on maps and developed as an orienteer, so to say?
Yeah, I don't think I've actually been doing so much more technical training, but it's definitely a different terrain, and I've also had more opportunities to go on training camps and trying out other type of terrains, and I think that's been the most important part of it.
We who has followed your development during the years from a youth runner throughout the junior classes know that you've early been getting a lot of confidence in the Nydal's team in the relays, but now you're a real senior. What's your ambitions going into the big senior class?
Yeah, of course, it's going to be a bit of a challenge to take the step up. So I'm focusing on developing as an athlete and not so much on maybe achieving the results straight away. So I have to be, patient with my training, and then hopefully gradually take steps to establish in the elite class as well.
Your clubmate with Johanna Riedefeldt, who is a world-class runner, and you also have other clubmates who are top runners. How are you doing compared to them in trainings? That's a good measurement.
Yeah, of course, it's very nice to have a good training company in Uppsala. And it's not been so many trainings now after the new season started, but I think, it's looking good. And I think that I'll be able to take the step. I just have to be patient and have the continued improvement. Yeah.
How do you dare to be patient? I know every athletes are really ambitious, and there is always new competitions coming. We know that 2024 will give us both world champs and European champs.
Yes. Of course, you always want to achieve good results and to have good races. But I think that this year for me will be the most important will be to gain experiences and to hopefully I will be able to compete something internationally, but then it will be to gain experience and not to achieve great results, I think.
Yeah, you continued the development. We saw you already in the international scene last year. I mentioned European champs and world champs. The Europeans is in the forest and a sprint, and there is a sprint world champs. Do you have any specific sprint trainings, or how do you look at the prep for an eventually world champs?
I try not to think that or that world championship is a goal for me, but of course, if the training goes well and that I get and I do good in the selection races, that will be an opportunity. But I try to not focus particularly on sprint training and try to have a more long-term view on the training. So forest races, the forest training will be important as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. But when you're talking about long-term, is it like looking 25 or 27, or is it like that? Or are you just being patient overall?
I would say maybe overall. It's always good to be, to have... I think that both the sprint and the forest orienteering, you can gain much from doing both and not have a very on and off relationship to the two of them.
So you will not we also saw that you were in the junior classes, you were taking medals in both the forest and sprint races. A really successful J-Walk last year with five medals in total. How will you evaluate that champ?
Yeah, well, it was successful, I can say. But of course, I was a bit disappointed not to take the step all the way to the top. I felt like I had the potential and the shape to do that, but with some mistakes and not the best races, I couldn't expect anything more. So, it was good.
Yeah, but you missed the top position or the gold medal last year, but you got the gold medal in 2022. Is maybe that the biggest memory as a junior when you won the sprint relay in Portugal?
It's hard to pick only one race, but of course that was a very very fun experience, and it's always cool to succeed as a team. And yeah, the Portugal championships was quite up and down, you can say, with the first the forest fire, and then we got the chance to run the relay, and then achieving the gold medal there was of course a very nice experience and something I will remember forever.
Yeah, you will also stand in the history books as the first ever sprint relay goal in Jaywalk history, so that's also something. But about succeed as a team, you have a really good team in Ukulene. How are you working and training towards the big relays?
Yes, it's very fun to be part of the Ukulene team and to build up a good women's team there as well. We're just having a lot of trainings together and a lot of relay specific forest training as well. So that I think is a key for us to succeed in the relays. And I think also I gain a lot from it personally as well, with some mass starts and high intensity orienteering.
It's really something you really like to be in the fight against an opponent. We saw it lately, maybe in the Norwegian champs relay, you against the big veteran Anne Margrethe Hausken Nordberg. Are you intrigued by such situations?
Of course, it's always fun to compete against others, and but I wouldn't say that I find that more exciting than orienteering by myself. I like the relays when you get the excitement from what can I say, that you get the excitement from running live time together with others, and really being in their moment.
We know that you were in the Nydal team winning Tio Mila. Now it will be 2 years ago this spring. You are now in Ukulene, also heading towards victory in Tio Mila. What's the differences between the relay culture in Norway and in Sweden? Can you put some words on that?
I would say that what I've experienced so far is that it's a much bigger focus on it in Sweden. You have Tio Mila, which really is the yearly goal for the whole club, and while in Nydalen it was more of a fun event that the whole club took part in. It wasn't something you talked about like all the time, but it feels like in Sweden it's really the event of the year, and everything that the club builds itself around, I would say, almost.
Yeah, and how do you then deal with the night legs who will come in Tio Mila this spring? Are you prepared?
Yeah, that's something we, of course, have been discussing a lot and been trying to integrate in our training with joining the joining the night training and focusing more on it. I don't think it will do so much difference. It's still orienteering and still a relay, and
Does Tio Mila or Jukola suit you best as the setup with the legs are this year? What's your evaluation?
I haven't been looking so much into it, to be honest, but I'm not sure.
But you were better in Jukola last year than you were in Tiumila. Was that just because of the performances on that day?
Yeah, I would say so. The spring season for me wasn't the best. And I think that also as a team, we had to have sort of a test before we really could. It was the first big relay that we ran together with the team. So I think that we had more confidence going into Jukola. And I think that was maybe the most important.
And now you have even more confidence. Can you challenge the big club IFK from the West Coast?
I think that would be a bit too hard, but yeah, it's orienteering, so everything can happen. Then if we have a good day, and I think the IFK team will need to have a really bad day if any club will have the chance to challenge them, I would say.
But will you challenge for the last leg, or are you confident running some of the earlier legs and let Johanna take the last leg still in 2024?
I think Johanna is still the best one to put on the last leg, and I think that will be the best for everyone.
but about relays, there is also a big relay in Scotland in the World Champs, a sprint relay also there. I think maybe everyone would put Kasper Fosser and Andrine Benjaminsen on the last two legs in the Norwegian sprint relay team. But how are you looking on the first leg there? Is that something you are thinking about?
No, I haven't been thinking about that, to be honest. I think there are many other girls in the Norwegian team that have better chances to get onto that team, and that, yeah.
Is it more like you are aiming for the other World Cup rounds and the Europeans? Is that your thoughts now in early January?
Yeah, I think that will be a bit easier and better. Yeah, of course, it's still hard to get into the Norwegian team, and I will have to have good trainings now into the season to be able to fight for positions in the World Cup as well.
Yeah, and I assume you will. Your ambitions lies on the in the World Cup team, and you will go for a training camp in Hungary also in the spring. I think.
Yeah, hopefully I will be able to do that. So I'm really looking forward to taking part in the Norwegian national team, as I'm now here in Australia instead of being together with them on their training camp in Tenerife right now. So I think I have a lot to look forward to the coming season.
Yeah, what is the biggest difference in the team? What can you learn from the more experienced girls and guys? You have been in some camps with the team, and also, in the international events.
Yeah, of course, there are so many good runners in the Norwegian team, and very competent trainers as well. So there's lots of experience that I can take advantage of there, and get good matching on the training camps, and good input on both physical training and the more technical orienteering training. So there's a lot to get from there.
Do you have any personal trainer who set up the daily training plan or something like that?
Yeah, I have been getting together with Janne Salmi the last couple of weeks, and we've been trying to or I've been getting some feedback from him on my training and getting some suggestions about what to do and how to develop the coming season.
Yeah, then I suppose he has put some World Champs 2025 maps of Finland in front of you. And putting the task for you in 2024? What should you be satisfied with after the season?
You mean goals or?
Yeah, goals.
We've been mostly talking about the development, and that this year will be mostly focusing on the improvements and not gaining the best results.
What is the key to get there? Is it continuous training or?
Yeah, I think that's the most important, and to avoid injuries and sickness and everything, and then of course gaining experience along the way.
We'll wish you good luck on that road, Pia, and thanks for having time to talk with us during your should we call it Christmas holiday in Australia.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and good luck in 2024 season.
Thank you.
With the last part to go.
Pia Jungvik there. She is down in Australia having warm and nice weather there. I mentioned before the interview if she is capable of taking a position in the Norwegian World Champs team. And during the interview, I asked if she was aiming for the sprint relay team in the Norwegian team. What do you think about both those questions?
Well, we start with the last one, with the sprint relay team. I think if you qualify for the World Champs team, then of course you have a good chance to be in the sprint relay team. I would assume that maybe, with three spots in the sprint, three spots in the individual, in the knockout sprint, maybe four, maximum five girls are selected from the Norwegian team. And if you're among those four or five, you could also be among the best two. As a first year elite runner, it's going to be hard to take the step up already. We know that she's a very, very good runner. She had a fantastic J-walk with five medals out of five possibilities. But the step up at the elite level is a big step, even for the best ones, that coming from the junior age with a lot of J-walk medals and so on. So I think it's correct of her to be patient and not be like, I'm going to win the world championship within 2 years or something like that. Because it's not a given that you can go from winning medals at J-Walk to go up and win medals at the elite level very soon. Maybe I'm wrong now, but I think that no Norwegian girls have ever won a medal individually under the age of 25 at the world championship.
That could be true. I could not arrest you spontaneously on that one, at least. The average age for a first medal is quite high. It's 27 or something like that.
Yeah, so I think with the history in mind, I think it's the right mindset that you want to focus on the development and become a better orienteer. And then, I mean, she has some experience already from elite level She was running the World Cup round in Norway this spring in 23, where she was just outside the top 40 in the middle distance. At the European Champs in the autumn, she was number 21, I think, in the sprint, and then something around that 25, 26 or something like that in the knockout sprint. And the gap up to, for example, a top 10 in the individual sprint wasn't more than around 20 seconds. So the gap to a really good result is not that big, even if the gap up to Alexandersson, Simon Eibersholt, and those are really big.
She got also to the quarterfinals in the knockout sprint in the Europeans. Quite good there, I think. She's doing quite good also in the. Yeah, she's already won Tiomila. That's not bad for a youngster. Do you think she should be patient and think more about qualifying for World Champs in Finland in 1.5 years?
It depends. I think when you are racing the selection races, the ambition should obviously be at performing as good as possible, and then a spot in the World Champs team already next year is of course a possibility. She's already shown that with two times top 25 in the European Championship that she's not that far off the other Norwegian girls. I think a little bit as we started this about where you have to focus. The question is, should you focus fully on one specific championship or more broader on general development? I think she's in the phase of her career where she should focus a bit more on the general development and not, for example, go all in just sprint specific trainings and put all mental effort into preparing for Scotland next year or this year. We're in 24 now already.
Yeah. About medal winning Norwegians, there was this gala this weekend in Norway announcing this year's best or last year's best sportsmen and women. Probably don't watch that in Switzerland, but there was an orienteering touch in the women's class there.
Yeah, I mean, there was a orienteering touch in the men's class with Kasper Fosse being nominated, which is an honor itself. But yeah, of course, obviously, he did not win. But on the women's side, I think Ragne Wiklund, the former, should we say former orienteer, or should we say that she's still an orienteer? Let's say she's still an orienteer. It's not that she was running some orienteering races last year. So Ragne Wiklund, the speed skater, she won it, didn't she?
Yeah, she won the Orienteer Women of the Year in Norway. That's quite impressive. But she's performed quite impressive also in the speed skating.
Maybe in 10 years' time or something like that, maybe a bit before, say in 5 to 10 years' time, maybe Pia Jong-Wiik will be nominated after winning 3 medals at the World Championship somewhere in 2033 or something like that.
That would be something. But next week we will have a guest who has won all he can win or all you can win in orienteering. That will be really exciting. If you don't have any hot or not, we can just leave it with that teaser and go out on that note this episode.
Yeah, just a short hot. The upcoming weekend is the first European world ranking event of the season. We've already had world ranking events in China and South Africa, but now the season is coming to Europe as well. In the weekend where the Madeira Orienteering Festival is, there will be one world ranking event. We're not far away from a lot more world ranking events. We have soon this big sprint weekend in Edinburgh in the end of January, and then February is the traditional full program with world ranking events in Portugal and Spain, where we can finally start to see some proper result list and see who is doing really good with the winter training. So now the orienteering season of 2024 is officially started, but it's about to get hot really soon.
Yeah, that will be interesting. Then we will have a good special guest, and also we can talk about the first world ranking events in Europe this season. So that it's been something to look out for. Thanks for this episode.
Bye bye.
Mannen dro ut og løp orientering med kart og kompass og med riktige sko. Sikta sågar etter beste notering, for kroppen var lett og god.
Your national orienteering podcast. Map and compass, navigation skill, orienteering competition.
Jeg har møtt noe jævlig på bossen her oppe.
Running like a motherfucker. Your national orienteering podcast.